You're listening to the Stone Tapes on Siren 107.3 FM with Sam Stone and friends.
Oh, it's a classic piece of music, that. That's
what
fantastic.
What do we think of the Monster Mash, guys?
Oh, I love it.
One of my favourites. Gets me into the Halloween spirit, definitely.
And talking of Halloween, welcome to the Halloween edition of the Stone Tapes. And in the studio today, we've got Patricia H. Ash.
Ooh.
We have with us David J. Howe. And we have with us a surprise guest today, which is Miss Lindsay Gold. And, of course, our producer, Alex Levchuk. Hi, Alex. So, we've got a great lineup today, and I think we're going to kick off immediately with Patricia's review. Can you tell us what you're reviewing this week, Patricia?
Right. So, this week, I've gone with Halloween, and I've done vampires. It's called Those Who Hunt the Night by Barbara Hambly. It's not a new book. It was published in 1988, and it's one of my favorites. I've read this one again and again and again. It is a Victorian murder mystery with vampires and mad science and also spies. I mean, it just has everything, absolutely everything. So, a quick summary. Don Simon Isidro, which I'm probably mispronouncing, but I don't speak Spanish, so that's why, is a vampire who would rather not be murdered. So, he seeks the help of a mortal human being to help him track down who or whatever is killing all of the vampires in London. So, the person that he's turned to for help is Professor James Asher, who is a retired spy and also a linguistics professor. Because, of course. And with James Asher comes his wife, Lydia, who is probably the best character in the entire book. She's clever. She's a doctor in Victorian times. And she's a she's a woman. So that's pretty impressive. She's a pretty formidable person. And she's clever, inquisitive, and nearsighted.
Nearsighted as well.
Speaking as someone who is nearsighted, I can't see anything hardly without my glasses. I really like seeing protagonists who are smart and can't see. I just love it.
It's like making them a bit more normal, isn't it?
Yeah,
making them like everybody else.
They are people. So if they're people, then the vampires might actually be real. Ooh. Which just adds this extra layer to any horror story. So where was I? So the vampires are key in any vampire book. And these are good ones. They've got teeth. They're individuals. You get to meet a whole bunch of them, and they're all very different people, and all very, very dangerous, frightening creatures that are at the same time very alluring.
Best kind of vampires to me, I think.
And quite, not quite sexy. That just doesn't really come into it, but very, very alluring, very interesting. It's like the flame, and you're a moth.
Yes.
And I think Those Who Hunt the Night really has captured that. And it's really interesting to see into these vampires' world and solve the mystery with them. I mean, when you can read a mystery book several times over and it doesn't lose anything, then it's a good book. So I would definitely give that 9 out of 10.
Wow, that's a big score.
Absolutely.
Any thoughts?
Oh, that's fantastic. Right. I mean, Barbara Hambly's, I think, one of the great kind of fantasists that we've had over the years. And obviously, this one of Those Who Hunt the Night is certainly one to seek out if you've not
definitely
experienced
you can get
work
it
before.
You can get it on Amazon. Mm. I researched this morning.
I think yes. I'm going to download that
fantastic.
One.
I highly recommend
very
that.
Much.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I love a protagonist who's believable. It's very important to me in fiction. So many times, though, I go on Amazon and there'll be a review saying something like, oh, the characters in this are great, and then it'll be like everyone's a 6-foot supermodel and...
they're all flat. They're not multi-dimensional, which is what you really need, isn't it? They're not 3D real coming off the page.
Yeah, it sounds really good. I'm going to check it out.
That's fantastic. So that's the title.
That is Those Who Hunt the Night by Barbara Hambly.
Thank you so much. Now on the telephone, all the way from the USA, is horror director, writer and good guy, Mike Mendes. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Oh, very good. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's great. We're really pleased to have you here. And for our listeners, Mike is the director of such horror films as Grave Dancers, Big Ass Spider and Love Alantula. I'm sure you've seen a few of those. I know I've seen all of them. And you're also a producer, aren't you? I'm one of the directors of the new Tales of Halloween film, which is very current at the moment because that's going to be out very shortly, isn't it?
Yes, I believe in the UK it comes out on Friday on iTunes and certain VOD providers.
Wow, fantastic. So soon. That's wonderful. I didn't realise it'd be out so soon. How did you get involved in Tales of Halloween?
Well, we're a legitimate, group of friends in L.A., like a lot of horror filmmakers. We hang out and spend time and watch horror movies and do things together. And one of our friends, Axel Carolyn, had the idea of, like, look, you know, we all love this. We all enjoy the same type of holiday spirit and whatnot, and we love Halloween. We should make a movie together. And so that really was kind of the kick in the pants, you know, just someone kind of saying it. And then, you know, she brought on her husband, Bill Marshall, onto the project, and that kind of, you know, solidified it. It was like, well, okay, if you guys are willing to do it, you know, I think I can put this together. And so I went to Epic Pictures, who, made Big Ass Spider, and, they agreed to jump on board, and we got it made. So a year and a half later, here we are. So yeah, it was a pretty quick and amazing process.
So tell us a little bit about it. How does Tales of Halloween flow? How does it work?
So it's 10 stories that all take place on Halloween in the same town on the same night. And it's just sort of a story of the weird things that happen on Halloween. And each filmmaker took a different sort of approach and a different slice about celebrating the holiday, whether it's, here in the U.S., we're very big about our lawn decorations or, of course, there's lots of fun to be had with mischievous trick-or-treaters and whatnot. I took the approach of what happens to mass serial killers on the scariest night of the year.
Oh, I'm liking that already.
Maybe there's something scarier out there than them. So there's all sorts of different approaches, to Halloween. And so we all kind of got together and celebrated, and that was sort of the spirit of it.
So it's 10 segments, and each segment has got a different director and a different writer.
Yes.
So
Most of the times, we really wanted to encourage filmmakers to really bring their vision. Most of the times, the directors wrote it and edited it. So it really is, what we were kind of trying to encourage is very pure voices from the filmmaker, It's rare that you get the opportunity to do whatever you like. So within these parameters, it was sort of like, this is,
So it's not really, It's not really like portfolio films have been in the past, things like the old Amicus films, you know, like Vault of Horror and all of those great classics, where, of course, you might have different writers on each segment, but the basic film crew, director, editor, etc., was all the same throughout the film. Here, we've got a, like, presumably yourself and I think Mike and Neil, sorry, and Axel were exec producers. You've got your vision kind of gluing it together, and then all of the individual directors bringing their own visions, as you said, to these individual segments. And
exactly, it's 10 segments, all with kind of the individual filmmaker, you know, point of view of it. And you know, and again, I'm just one of the 10. You know, what kind of glues it all together is that it's in the same town and the same night. So we have a lot of characters that cross over. People reference other episodes throughout the night. You know, we have a radio DJ played by the wonderful Adrian Barbeau. That's kind of heard throughout the, from the film. You know, so it is, you know, one of the things we were trying to do is that, you know, we feel a lot of, especially modern anthologies, feel very scattered and not connected. And we wanted to try a different approach. We wanted to do something that felt like one, you know, one piece, you know. And so that was the thing, is to have individual voices, but have everyone working together and, you know, working with each other and supporting each other to kind of make a cohesive piece. And we did. I mean, you know, the wonderful thing is, even though the filmmakers wrote the segments, you know, we all collaborated on them. We all would give each other scripts. We would give notes to each other. We would, you know, be on each other's set. It really was a whole feeling of community about it. So that's really one of the things that I think makes this project special.
That sounds absolutely incredible.
It really does.
I mean, it sounds, I mean, reminds me as well of that film Trick or Treat. That was out.
That's actually one of our Halloween favorites.
That's a Halloween favorite of ours. So, I mean, was that kind of part of the inspiration here?
Yeah, but at the very least, we'd like to think we make for a very good opening act for Trick or Treat, you know. So, you know, we hope that could be an annual tradition. You know, a little Tales of Halloween, a little Trick or Treat, I think, makes for a good evening. So,
Judging from your other films, Mike, that we've been very, you know, very privileged to watch, I'm sure you're going to do an amazing job of this, and I think it's going to be fantastic. I'd like to know a little bit more about you and your origins, if we can just take a step back now from that. Can you tell me what was the first film that you either wrote, directed? What was your first project?
Well, you know, I've been making movies since I was 10 years old. I was just one of those kids that, you know, played with my, we had the first video camera on the block, you know, and so I would make movies with my toys, and that kind of went through grade school and through high school. But then, you know, early college, I just became very focused in wanting to make a feature. So I did a film in 1997 called Killers, which got into the Sundance Film Festival, and that's sort of what started my career off, you know, so. So that was the beginning.
And you seem to have followed that path mostly with horror in the horror field. What is it about the horror genre that appeals to you the most?
Yeah, I don't know. I just love it. It just doesn't seem like there's nothing, I mean, that I want to do. And the thing is that, you know, I feel I'm very lucky is that I get to make other types of movies within the horror genre.
Yes.
Funny enough, what I don't make is pure horror movies. But I make horror comedies and horror action movies, and you know, it's like I want to make all the genres of movies, but just steeped in, you know, the overall blanket of horror. You know, it's just, I think I just like monsters. I like, you know, I'm just one of those people that naturally, it's not an act, it's, you know, I'm just naturally attracted to the macabre.
Oh,
you know,
me
it's,
too. I understand exactly where you're coming from there. I think
yeah,
we all
exactly.
do.
Yeah, exactly. I love skulls and spider webs and dark candlelit, you know, rooms and stone, you know, archways and gothic castles. And, you know, I mean, that's just, I don't know, that feels like home to me. And I don't know exactly what that is. But you know, I think what we found in the making of this movie is that, you know, there's a lot of people that kind of have that connection, you know, to the dark and the macabre. And I think that's what people are kind of reacting to. Entails of Halloween. It's what brought all of us together, and I think it's what is people are attracted to about it.
I think Lindsay's got a question for you now.
Hi, Mike. You've got a reputation for creature features, such as, you know, spiders and tarantulas. Is there anything or anyone you'd love to work with?
Oh, did you not?
Anyone?
Sorry. Is there anyone? I'm not that close to the mic. Is there anyone or anything you'd love? Sorry, anything or anyone you'd love to work with?
Oh, so many. I mean, you know, God, I don't even know where to begin. I mean, you know, I will say that I'm making an attempt. We'll see how it goes, to kind of move away from creature features for the time being. But I don't know. I mean, it's almost too broad a question, because it's like I love so much about film that you know, there are just so many actors that I'd love to work with. Coming up, I have doing a movie with Dolph Lundgren, and he's someone that I definitely wanted to work with. And just going off of that note, oh my God, I would love to work with Sylvester Stallone, you know, for that thing, or Schwarzenegger, you know. So certainly there's a part of me that wants to work with the 80s action guys, or, you know, I'd love to do something with Bruce Campbell. I'd love to, you know, I mean, I could go on and on.
Do you like the action kind of film type approach, Mike?
I do. I mean, you know, and I think that's, you know, certainly with the Dolph one, you know, you're going to see a little more of the horror action, you know, kind of thing. You know, I think I've been doing horror comedy, you know, for a bit. So now I think it's time for a little horror action. So, I mean, I do. I mean, I think that's one of the wonderful things about the genre, about the horror genre, is that, you know, it can be so multifaceted, and, you know, there's so much that can be done with it, you know, and I think you can make all sorts of types of movies, whether romantic horror movies, you can make dramatic horror movies, you can make, you know, funny horror movies, you know. I think there's kind of no end to stuff you can do with monsters and the macabre and creatures and, you know, the things that go bump in the night. So,
you have,
you know,
such a lot of fun with that as well, can't you? Really? Just such a lot of fun. I mean, Big Ass Spider was just brilliant. I mean, David is hopelessly arachnophobic, aren't you?
and
he was really, really worried about watching this film. I said, look, it's called Big Ass Spider. What's not to like?
Right. So. There you go. Exactly. I do like to have fun. You know, I do like to have fun with that type of movie, especially, you know, the sillier it is or the sillier the concept. I just think, you know, that, you know, a good time could be had with that, you know.
Do you have a favorite horror film, Mike?
Sure, yeah. I mean, many. Well, Evil Dead 2 is probably, I would call, the most influential movie on me. But if I wanted pure horror, I think The Exorcist is, you know, there's no beating that.
Absolutely.
Right, that's absolutely brilliant.
You won't get me watching Evil Dead 2, though.
I've got it on
Evil Dead 1 is enough.
Yeah, it's great. I loved Evil Dead 2 because it was like Evil Dead, only made properly with a bigger budget.
Right, yeah, totally.
Maybe
yeah,
I should
absolutely.
Watch it then.
It's such a wonderful film. I can't recommend it enough.
Yeah, I think we're great. So I think you kind of mentioned at the start there, Mike, that Tales of Halloween then in the UK is this Friday.
Uh-huh.
This Friday, is it?
This Friday, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I know iTunes for sure, and there's some other venues. I'm not sure what you have over there, if there's a Vudu, but I know at least here in the U.S., you know, like Xbox, PlayStation, all the VOD providers, all that kind of thing, you can find it. So I know the U.K. has a similar thing that I know that we're trying to do over there, but iTunes for sure, that's
right.
Definitely the surefire way to find it. Over there,
that's absolutely brilliant.
Mike, thank you so much for joining us. Hopefully we're going to see you again.
Thanks
in LA
for having me.
Maybe do a bit more scaryoke.
That would be great. Oh, that would be wonderful. I would enjoy that.
Yeah, I do. I would too.
All
so
right.
Thanks very much for coming and joining us today, and for telling us all about
you
Tales
got it.
Of
thanks
Halloween.
Thanks for having me.
Bye.
Okay, thanks so much. Happy Halloween to you.
There is nothing sadder than the agonized grief of a tender-hearted monster. They're playing my song.
Hey, fix me up.
Just a sucker.
And that was B.A. Robertson, Sucker for Your Love from the Monster Club. Does anybody remember that film?
Oh, yes. I love that film. I love the Vincent Price bit on the beginning as well.
Absolutely awesome. And we've got on the phone with us today Robin Pearce, our Wales correspondent and Starburst reviewer. Hi, Robin. How are you today?
Good evening. How are you?
Hello. We're good, thank you. How are you? How's everything?
Not bad at all, thank you. Not bad at all.
I'm looking
Wales is sunny and warm for the time of year.
Oh my goodness, we're so jealous. It's been so dreary here. It's been dreary. So what have you got today for us, Robin? You're doing something different this week. You're not reviewing a book, you're reviewing a film, I believe.
I've Well, I've gone to the cinema because I'm a huge sci-fi film fan, as well as a horror film fan. You can be both, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Of course.
And of course, being a sci-fi film fan, you got to love the planet Mars. And wasn't it just the best that they found evidence of running water on Mars just as Ridley Scott's new film, The Martian, is coming out?
He couldn't have paid for it. I mean, no.
Absolutely
amazing.
Stop at nothing these days.
I thought that was fantastic news, actually, about the water on Mars.
Oh, so did I, because where there is water, there is life.
Absolutely fascinating idea.
It makes the universe kind of less lonely because, as they said in Contact, what a massive waste of space if there's only us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, I went to see The Martian, and, you know, being a sci-fi fan, you've got to love the planet Mars, because it's the big mystery, isn't it?
Mm.
Ever since H.G. Wells.
Absolutely.
And another thing that I love is the films where something goes horribly wrong. ever since I was, I think, about 9, and I saw a Gregory Peck movie called Marooned, just before the Apollo missions where an orbiting Apollo capsule failed to come back to Earth and had to be rescued by David Janssen, I believe. Anyway, when I went to see The Martian, I had a feeling that this is going to be something that I've seen before, because anybody remember Robinson Crusoe on Mars?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think so, yeah.
Beautifully filmed in Monument Valley with red filters. And I thought, you know, okay, we've done the whole somebody survives being on Mars things. And of course, since then, we've seen 2 Martian films, Mission to Mars and Red Planet. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, what's this got that's new? And it has plenty. It's set in the near future, and there's a manned mission on Mars, the Hermes crew. They're out taking samples, and they understand from their mission control, you know, up in orbit, that there's a massive storm on its way. And they all make it back to the spaceship before this huge hurricane blasts them to oblivion. Well, they get off, but astronaut Matt Damon does not. And he's considered dead, unrecoverable. They have to go for the good of the mission and leave him there. He's declared dead. He can't survive, except he has. He's got enough oxygen in his suit to survive, but not for very long. He's also been impaled by an antenna.
Oh,
right?
Okay, he's not having a good day.
It's not a good day.
Poor Matt Damon.
He's had better days.
Not in the Bourne films, but yeah.
So, he has to survive. He has next to no food. His oxygen is depleting. Their sort of base on Mars is basically wiped out. His teammates, he can't radio them, because remember, the antenna is stuck in his belly. And any help, any hope of help, is 3 or 4 months away.
Hmm.
Now, the gift of the film is that Ridley Scott worked very closely with NASA. In fact, they offered him their services as technical experts.
Wow.
And they've taken it that the film is completely feasible.
Yeah.
What you're seeing is NASA's go-to plans with equipment that would be deployed on such a mission. So it's entirely feasible. And I'm going to stop giving...
Yeah, we don't want any spoilers. We don't want any spoilers.
But from a technical aspect, it's a soaring triumph of the human spirit in managing to grow food, managing to make sure he has enough oxygen, checking the maps, because what NASA do on any, what they plan to do on a Mars mission is you can't carry all the equipment with you, so they send stuff ahead.
Yeah.
He needs to find out where they've deployed this stuff so that he can get to it and enhance his own supplies. The stuff that NASA has already sent there over the years, like the Mars rover, for example, that has long since stopped working, But if he can get to it and get to the technicalities of it and in the inside,
wow,
he can actually figure out a rudimentary visual communication system with mission control, as long as somebody's looking at the right computer.
Mm. Wow.
And, you know, every so often you see a sci-fi film that elevates above the rest. And to be fair, Ridley Scott has got more than his fair share of these. But I would put this up, and this is going to be my controversial statement. For me personally, in sci-fi terms, this is up there with Blade Runner.
Wow, that is
absolutely
something.
Ooh, wow. You know when you're going into a cinema and you're thinking, well, this will be a 5 out of 10, and you walk out and you think, 9+, 9+.
Wow.
Yeah.
I really want to see this film now.
And is it worth seeing at the pictures then? Is it spectacular?
It is worth seeing at the cinema. I didn't see it in 3D. I saved that for The Wire, which I saw a couple of days ago. And if you suffer from vertigo in any way, don't see that in 3D.
No.
I wouldn't.
We don't do 3D anyway.
I sat there and I shuddered. I'm not even scared of heights, but I shuddered. But it's well worth seeing. I can only imagine what it would have been like in 3D. But you don't need the gimmick.
Mm.
The film itself stands up perfectly well.
Wow.
It's one that, you know, day of release, I am buying that Blu-ray.
Right. Yeah.
I'm taking a day off.
I think we're going to be.
We'll be
going to be on our to buy this for definite.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Thank you so much, Robin. That's a great review. And
thank you very much.
Hopefully we'll talk to you again very, very soon. Speak.
I'll be here.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. This is Siren FM.
The Rock Train, leaving the station every other Thursday, 8 till 10, bringing you the best local and international bands from the world of rock and metal. The Rock Train. No tracks are too heavy.
Drink you.
You're listening to the Stone Tapes on Siren 107.3 FM with Sam Stone and friends.
And talking of friends, we have Joshua Lou Friedman on the phone, live from Los Angeles. You are in Los Angeles this week, aren't you, aren't you, Josh?
I am, for a very limited time. I'm getting ready, running around to fly out to all of you.
I know. We can't wait to see you very, very soon. I was just saying to Alex that you're arriving tomorrow afternoon, and I'm very excited.
I'm literally leaving for the airport in 2 hours.
So my gosh. We were lucky to catch you.
Absolutely.
Patricia here would like to ask you a question, because we've just been talking to Mike Mendez.
Yeah, and
how did that go? I talked to Mike the other day.
It was fantastic.
We're all very excited about Tales of Halloween. Yeah.
It was fab.
He said that you were involved in Tales of Halloween. And what exactly did you do?
Oh, my God. Boy, was I involved. I'm the first assistant director now on any film set. That's the most stressful job on set. The first AD, if a film set is a construction site, I'm the foreman. I schedule everything. I keep everybody moving on the schedule. All departments bottleneck through me. I worry about everything. Like, the director only has to worry about what's in front of him. The performance, the shot, I worry about what's behind him. Everything. It's a very stressful job. On any film set, and then with Tales of Halloween, I did 5 of the 10 stories.
Wow.
So that's 5 times.
That's a lot.
The workload, yeah. So 5 different directors, 5 different, department heads for each story. It was very crazy. It was a labor of love, too. Mike and Neil Marshall and Axel Carolyn, those are all good friends of mine, and I'm Mike's AD pretty much for every movie he does. So, it was great to put another notch in my partnership belt with Mike Mendez. I've done Big Ass Spider for him, a film called The Last Heist, his Lavalantula pickup shots, and Tales of Halloween. So we have a good working relationship together.
Yeah, you love doing the horror, don't you, Josh? It's fantastic.
Yeah, not only just got back from Cape Cod doing 2 back-to-back horror.
Yeah?
And we had Kane Hodder, who plays Jason in the Friday the 13th films, the original.
Oh, wow.
Friday the 13th series, and I have to admit, there was one moment where, it was a bit of a fanboy's wet dream, if you will, because we're in the woods with teenagers trying to have sex in a tent, and Kane Hodder coming up at him out of the woods in a crazy mask, in this not a hockey mask, but we had him in a goat head, right? And coming at them with these garden shears that were doubled up to look like a Darth Maul lightsaber that actually worked. And
that's
he comes
brilliant.
Up the woods and he tears the tent apart and he just tears these kids to shreds.
Oh, my word.
It was like, wow, that was a great horror moment for me to actually be there to run that set, craziness.
The fun you have.
Yeah. it was very cold, though. It was very, very cold. And we had a poor actress who was, literally only wearing underwear. She was topless, and then we covered her in blood, and it was 4 in the morning in the New England weather.
Blood's chilling.
Yeah, so we had to keep covering her up in between takes with these thermal blankets. And it was a lot of craziness, but we got through it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Sounds like you had a lot of fun.
So do you have a favorite moment from Tales of Halloween as well? That's obviously the Halloween.
Several. There's 2 of them. One of the short stories I did was called This Means War for directors Andrew Cash and John Skip. And it's literally like the Christmas tree light war between 2 neighbors, but it's a Halloween display. And once these 2 start fighting and go at it, all the trick-or-treaters and all the townsfolk kind of gather to come fight, and root them on. And what it is all of our friends from the horror community, all the directors, everyone making cameos, all of us are in there as the raging mob. And we got to have a lot of friends from the horror community on set, a lot of famous faces doing cameos, a lot of directors doing cameos. I think Mike, Axel, and Neil are even in there too. Just a bunch of us having a good time. And then, of course, the second of all, the foremost would be actually doing Mike's segment. When you see Tales of Halloween, it really stands out. Mike's always wanted to do a full-on Evil Dead-esque bloodbath, and that's what we did. It's nonstop phlegm splattering, jets flying, prosthetics, and just tons and gallons of blood. It is so much fun. And there's so many practical effects. I mean, we are all covered by the end of that shoot, but Mike's always wanted to do something like that, and he delivered it in spades. So you'll see it. You can't miss it. You'll see it when you see it in the movie.
That's fantastic. So I think I think Lindsay's got a little question here as well that she's particularly interested in.
Oh, yeah. Hi, Josh. Looking forward to meeting you.
This is Lindsay Gold, by the way, Josh, in case you didn't realise.
I'm looking forward to being out there, yes.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Well, as a professional drinker, I believe you've got a cocktail recipe of the month here for us all.
Oh, yes, I do. Last time I gave you guys the oatmeal cookie last time.
You did? Yes.
That one's a lot of fun. I guess this one, this month I was planning on doing, well, this is my worst impersonation of, hey, Scoob, what's the drink this month? Scooby Snack. Is the Scooby Snack. A Scooby Snack is equal parts Dory, liqueur, and Malibu rum, you know, coconut rum. You mix the Dory and the Malibu together and a little bit of pineapple juice, and you mix that up into a shot that you pour. Now, some people top it with whipped cream. I recommend adding a dash of half and half to it, and it gives the same effect. And, yeah, that's a Scoob Snack.
Dory and
coconut rum, a healthy splash of pineapple. Shake it all up together, stir it and strain it, a little bit of cream, and you've got a Scooby Snack.
Oh, wow. Absolutely salivating over here.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Josh. That's brilliant. Please stay on the line because we're going to have a little segment now, if that's okay, Sam.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll pick up now. We're going to have a chat about horror film music, which I know is a great interest of yours. So we've got a few bits and bobs that I've sort of sorted out here. So it's fantastic. I've always loved horror film music. I mean, it makes the films. And what I wanted to kick off with here was it's a track that's called Night of Horror. Now, I've been trying to do some research into this Night of Horror track. It's written by a guy called Roger Webb, and I haven't been able to find anything much about it online at all. It comes from an LP that I've got at home called Horror Movie Themes, which was released in 1975. Interesting little factette is that Roger Webb actually wrote the title music for 1980s Hammer House of Horror television series. And he also did things like Armchair Thriller and, as far as I can tell, George and Mildred, which is completely surreal. But what's interesting is that this particular track doesn't actually appear anywhere online. I haven't been able to find a digital copy of it at all. So I apologise in advance for the little cracks and pops because they've come off my own record, which I have copied for this. So this is Night of Horror, which sort of sets the scene for Halloween. That's Night of Horror. So what do you guys make of that?
Very screamy.
He's very screamy. Yeah, it's very screamy. I mean, it sounds like, is that just like maybe the theme of the actual, like, he did that for the album, which in itself is a collection of horror themes?
I think he might have been. I've long tried to find out if it was actually used anywhere or what it was from. But I think it's just a kind of a horror atmosphere that was put together for
I think that's
LP.
What it is. It's like to kick off, maybe it's just for the album, to kick off the selections that are on.
I mean, it's just, I've always used that at Halloween, you know, when the kids come to the door and they ring the doorbell and you put that on and they're screaming and it's wonderful. I always loved that.
Oh, yes. My favorite pastime. So that
kind of sets our scene for this little section. So the next little track that I've pulled out, and we're going way back here to 1935 now. Woo! Favorite film of mine, Bride of Frankenstein.
Oh yeah, James Whale. I was going to say if that was the first one that came to my head. Yeah, play it.
Yeah. So, and this is Franz Waxman was the composer on all of this. He did an incredible number of pieces. This piece, I don't think it's got a title, but I've called it Dr. Pretorius. It's a lovely, quirky refrain where Anesthesia appears as the Doctor. And for me, of course, I also remember this from Flash Gordon's trip to Mars about 3 years later, 1938, for the Mud Men.
Kind of a comedic feel to it, that one, for me. I don't know why. What do you think?
It has. It's sort of a...
Yeah.
Like, here's a comedic character.
Yeah, speaking of comedic, you know, The Bride of Frankenstein is a great soundtrack. Also, people into that soundtrack, I also recommend the soundtrack for Mel Brooks's Young Frankenstein.
Mm. Oh, yes. Absolutely. Yes.
That soundtrack with the hark back. Yeah, it's a really good one. It harks back to that.
That's absolutely true.
Great film. I like that
film. Tremendous. So for my next one, I'm going to leap forward now to 1977. And this is one of my favourite horror films, Suspiria. Directed by Dario Argento. And for me, one of the great delights of this film is the score by the Italian group Goblin. Now, the piece I've chosen here, it appears at the start of the film. And it's what underpins the initial death of one of the dance students at this academy that the film's set in. And it's an incredible oral assault which works perfectly with the visuals. So here we go with a little bit of Goblin. Goblin and Suspiria. What are the thoughts on that one, Sam?
I think it's very atmospheric.
Yeah, Lindsay?
I've always loved this piece. This is my favourite piece in the film. And I love that film.
And Josh?
Josh? Yeah, I've always loved that one too. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, yes. We can.
Okay, good.
Yeah. What about you,
yeah,
Patricia?
Any Argento, all this first of all of this film, the great Suspiria is that. definitely on top of the top of that file, top of that stack. One of my favorite scores of all of Argento's work.
Oh, it's brilliant, isn't it, Patricia?
I'm a bit frightened now, and I have to walk back to the train station.
Oh, that's tremendous. No, I mean, if you haven't seen the film Suspiria and you don't know the work of Goblin, it is well worth seeking out. It's one of the great horror films, I think, of Dario Argento's entire body of work, really. So next up, a little bit further forward, 1984. Not the film 1984, but Wes Craven's A Nightmare on Elm Street. And I was reading online that apparently this score is actually quite forgotten. People don't actually seem to appreciate how amazing Charles Bernstein's music and work on A Nightmare on Elm Street was. So what I've chosen here is a little track called Laying the Traps, which is a kind of a rock ballad, and it's absolutely perfect for the film. So this is from A Nightmare on Elm Street. So that's from A Nightmare on Elm Street. So, Josh, what the viewers on that one?
Yeah, the actual Freddy theme is my favorite on the whole soundtrack.
Yeah,
you know the ongoing theme that they use in every film. That one is up there with Phantasm as one of the creepiest.
Oh, I love Phantasm too.
Theme music for a horror genre. I mean, for a horror like icon. So Freddy music is great. The first three films in the series have the best soundtrack.
Oh,
I recommend all three.
It's tremendous. What do you think of that then, Lindsay?
It's bringing me flashbacks to the actual film. I own the entire collection at home. I've not watched them in ages. I used to be obsessed with them.
Oh, that's fantastic. Sam?
I think it's really atmospheric. Great piece of music.
Oh,
choice.
Brilliant.
Especially for Halloween.
Patricia?
Actually watched this film.
Oh, but what do you think of the music?
I will now because
yeah?
I like the music.
Excellent. So to close this very, very quick trip through some film music, I've come right up to date. I thought, let's go right up to date. So unfortunately, I've had to leave out so much. Josh, you mentioned Phantasm there, which I love. I've missed out John Carpenter. I love John's Halloween, The Fog, Escape from New York, all of those. But the one I've chosen to close with is from It Follows, which was a film that came out this year, and the music's by a group called Disasterpiece. And this track, which is actually...
I own the soundtrack as well.
Yeah. And this track is actually the opening titles for the film, and I think it absolutely perfectly captures the terror of the film. And I'm just so pleased. So this is Disasterpiece, and the opening titles of It Follows... So that's Disaster Pieces, titles for It Follows. So, Josh, you've got the LP. What do you think of the music?
The whole thing. It's great stuff. Yeah. And also, like you mentioned, Phantasm, it definitely reminded me back to that style when we had, you know, films like Phantasm with that. It just reminded me of the Phantasm score all across.
Right, that's tremendous. So very, very, very quickly, Josh, favorite horror film?
Favorite horror film? I'll give you the one that scared it's a toss-up, but at least from the 70s, it scared the crap out of me. One of them is called Burnt Offerings.
With yes.
Oliver Reed and Karen Black.
Yes.
The couple with their kid who moves into a house and the house is alive. Yeah, that gets me every time.
That'll do.
Film that also,
awesome.
That's fantastic. So, Lindsay.
Yeah, it's a really scary movie. And the same time, another film came out called The Sentinel.
Oh, I love The Sentinel.
I just watched that recently. That's great.
With a woman who moves in the apartment.
Yes. Oh, good ones, Josh. So, Lindsay, what do you think?
Those strong grabbers. Strong grabbers.
What do you think of Disaster Piece there?
It was great. It really, I really do love 70s and 80s horror films.
Yeah.
I watch them a lot at night. I actually recently watched The Sentinel because of Chris Sarandon.
I'm
going
to have
to
cut everybody out now. I'm afraid that's the end of the Stone Tapes for today. Thank you so much to Patricia, to David, to Lindsay, to Alex, and of course to Robin, and to Mike Mendez for joining us today as well, and of course Joshua Lou Friedman. And we'll see you in 24 hours, Josh.
I'll see you in 24.
Can we speak to him?